Thanks for joining us. My name is Ibrahim Sani. We're going to start our Belanjawan 2024 discussion in this episode. Over the next 1 month or so, we're going to be having plenty of discussions from folks around the country and, in fact, international luminaries talking about what we need to expect, what is to be made out of the budget, and of course, what we want from the budget 2024. It is a mammoth task to look ahead for this particular administration, considering that this is the first full year budget that this unity government is responsible for. Here to discuss this and to expand on this further is a good friend of the show, Aurobindo Ponya, the director at PwC Taxation Services. Bindo, thanks again for taking the time to speak with us. Just to recap, 13th of October is D-Day. That's on Friday around 4 p.m. That's when the Prime Minister slash Finance Minister is going to be introducing the budget. What do you think we can expect from this particular budget? And the big question, actually, the GST. Do you think GST is going to be introduced this year?
Well, Ibrahim, thank you very much for having me on the show again. Right, 13th of October, Friday the 13th. Right, so I think it's a wonderful day to look at the budget.
Yeah. Okay.
What do I expect from the budget? I think some items have already been announced. For example, the progressive wage model is going to be discussed. So I think that is a good step forward in looking at income levels in Malaysia. We are tying it up with our minimum wage. Although at this point in time, it's going to be, I would say, not mandatory for businesses to join it. But I suspect in the longer term, I think it will become implemented and will become mandatory for businesses to in a way, implement the progressive wage system. I think that's good. Singapore has done it before, especially for low-wage earners, and that should be the way we move forward. In terms of tax measures itself, your first question was GST. Will GST be introduced? I believe that in terms of GST, it's not a matter of if GST will be introduced, but when it will be reintroduced, right? In its former form and a new form, etc. I do not expect it to be introduced in this budget, but I expect that the steps will be put into place to introduce it in the near future. That is what I expect.
What do you mean near future? What does near future look like? Next year's budget?
Okay, let's. I believe by next year's budget, it should be reintroduced. That would be my prediction on it. Mm-hmm. We also have to take into account that GST, although it's a broad-based tax, and I think I explained before that it can be a little regressive. Okay. Yeah. However, that it is, although it is not the perfect tax, it is the best known tax system we know in terms of collecting a broad-based tax, right? So its impact on the populace will be there. Right? There would be some inflationary aspects of it, but that needs to be managed. And I think the government of the day has still got about 4 years left in its term, so it does have a good runway to introduce and implement this tax. I suspect the coming year they'll be putting into place measures as to how the tax will be rolled out, how to ensure the hiccups we had in the previous rollout are not repeated, and how the revenue can be spent to the benefit of the rakyat.
These are cases that you're making in terms of you predicting that the GST might be introduced next year.
Yeah.
Maybe you can give us a little bit of clarification on why do you think the GST is not going to be introduced this year?
Okay. I believe that the former experience the population had with the GST and also the fact a lot of political parties attacked the introduction of the GST makes it a little bit toxic for an administration.
Even those in power today were against the GST then, remember?
Politicians globally, yep.
Yeah, so it depends
while
on which
you're in opposition and where you're in power, there are always two different issues to be dealt with.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. However, what I believe they're going, they're talking about subsidy rationalisation, right? They're talking about, I think, yesterday's papers about using the MySejahtera information, etc. and all that, okay? So I believe they're building a database, of who qualifies for subsidies, right? And I think when GST is introduced, importantly, businesses prefer GST than service tax, right? So I don't think it's the business community which is going to be opposing GST. It is how GST is sold to the populace at large, right? As to what is impacted, how much additional tax they pay, and what they get in return for the GST which they are paying on their consumption.
I think the population has two views of this. One is the merits of GST outright, but we're getting there in terms of trying to explain what the merits are and demerits are. The second is, I don't want to give more tax to the government because I'm not too sure they're going to use the money wisely. That is a bigger problem than the merits and demerits of GST.
Yes, absolutely, all right? Government spending, all right? Worldwide, how governments spend their money, I pay taxes, I'm happy to pay taxes. But when my taxes are wasted, I get annoyed.
Yeah. Right?
and I'm sure everybody else has the same feeling, right?
Yeah.
I believe this government is talking the talk at this moment, yeah, as to how they're going to spend it, the controls on corruption, and I believe those are all good talks, all right? In terms of whether they are walking the talk, I think it's too early to say. We probably need to give it another year or two to see what happens.
You see this past few 10 months or so, the economic direction of the country is being dictated by the, or it's been steered by Rafizi, not so much from the MOF, not so much from the two deputy finance ministers that we have, not so much from the Prime Minister himself. Do you see this as the EPU getting a little bit more power as opposed to this, in this particular administration, as opposed to previous administration? Where do you feel the amalgamation of economic policies and finance being the ministry itself being merged into one, or is it going to be like this moving forward?
Okay. In terms of policy itself, generally about tax policy, tax policy generally emanates from the Ministry of Finance, right? And it's administered by the tax authority in Malaysia, is the LHDN, the Customs Department.
Yeah.
Right? Now, in Malaysia, we also have the Economic Planning Unit, all right? So the Economic Planning Unit looks at the economy as a whole, and there's definitely some overlap with the Ministry of Finance itself. As to whether or not they should be amalgamated into one body, or there are too many cooks in the the kitchen, to put it, I think the jury is out on that. We have seen some countries where they do have different departments handling certain items where there's an overlap with a different department or different ministry, right? And it works out well. In some countries, no, right? So I believe the jury is out on that. I believe Rafizi, I mean, for example, the progressive wage system, it had been something which has been promoted by him, and I think it's a good idea, right? As to how it's implemented, what are the grants or incentives which are going to be given to businesses to implement this, he will have to discuss it with the Ministry of Finance. Because end of the day, they manage the country's finances. They need to know what can be given, what can't be given.
Okay. With this in mind, I want to talk to you about the possibility of the administrators of GST collection. Previously, we had the customs, but you know, me reading into my tea leaves, not consulting anyone. Was there anything that we need to read in between the lines now that there is a new DG in town when it comes to DG of Customs? She was appointed yesterday. Do you feel that that is in gear or in preparation of what we need to expect when it comes to GST collection? Is it going to be done by Customs?
Okay. I think the new DG of Customs is not an indication as to whether or not GST is going to be introduced, who's going to be collecting, etc. Right? But if I look at it globally, all right, in most countries, the administration of taxes has been merged into a single agency. A good example is the UK. It's now His Majesty's Revenue and Customs.
After 60 plus years,
Exactly. So His Majesty's Revenue and Customs. Previously, it was two departments. One was the revenue and one was the customs. All right? In Malaysia, we still have two agencies, the LHDN and the Royal Customs Department. My view is that from an administrative perspective, is that these agencies should be merged. Customs should concentrate on border control, smuggling, etc., and all that. Imports, exports, those are the type of things customs should concentrate on. Whereas in terms of the LHDN, they do have quite a bit of capability in terms of administrating taxes. They've been administrating direct taxes for many years. They are right now the main agency which collects the most revenue as far as Malaysia is concerned. And they will have a database, and if GST is folded into LHDN to manage, I believe that will benefit the country, not just in terms of the collection and administration, but also in terms of the information, the data. The data they collect from GST will complement their direct tax collection and administration as well. They will be able to see both, and they'll be able to see where there are loopholes, where the taxpayers are evading or avoiding taxes. Previously, there was cooperation between the two departments, between the LHDN and Customs, but I think in one single agency, this will be better. Furthermore, LHDN is now rolling out the e-invoicing system, and I think that is a big, huge step for Malaysia in terms of tax administration. It effectively means that at some point in time, in the near future, LHDN will require all taxpayers to be on the e-invoicing system. Is all going to be digitalized. So they will be able to know who is buying what, who is selling what, and they will have that information. I think I mentioned in one of the previous show, data is the lifeblood of the tax administration.
Absolutely.
That
and,
data,
and not just that, not retrospective data, but real-time data.
Exactly.
When invoicing's done,
exactly,
we know things live.
True. So that data is going to be very important to them. And I believe it would not be too far a step for them to actually incorporate GST into the e-invoicing system.
Okay, let's take a step back and let's take a look into the whole idea of collection from the government. We know that from this year, because of the increment of the bands of higher paying tax and income earners, they are collecting more than before. We get that, but it's still taxation upon income. In fact, GST is still in a way, however you want to set up GST, it's still based on income. The issue here is on capital taxation and getting more there. Capital gains tax, inheritance tax, wealth tax, many more. We used to have it at one time, it's no longer there. I'm talking about inheritance tax. Capital gains tax is being discussed at length. Of course, people are, why we haven't been doing it before is because, you know, the argument is it might prohibit investors from looking at us as a more, viable place to invest in. Whatever the reasons are, we need more money from capital. What are your thoughts in terms of the government talking about capital gains tax as it means a serious means of introduction for this particular budget?
Okay. So, currently Malaysia, we have a capital gains tax, but it's only on real property transactions and the transactions in real property companies, shares of real property companies. We've never looked at taxing gains arising from other sources.
Okay? Yeah, particularly investments.
Exactly. Mm. Yeah, all right. So I think in the retable budget in last February, so they proposed introducing a capital gains tax on the disposal of shares in unlisted companies. Mm. And they said they were going to do it at a very low rate. Right? So, and they want to introduce it in 2024. Okay. So I believe in this budget, we'll probably get more details on it. And I foresee that it will be introduced in 2024. Right? Now, in terms of the taxation of labor and capital, right? Now, there is now a debate which is going on globally, right? So, effectively for many years, the theoretical discussion was that capital should be taxed more favorably than labor.
It has to be.
Yeah. Well, that was the theory behind it, okay? I don't necessarily agree with the theory, but the idea was that the capital will be re-employed into the economy, etc. Investors will put it in. Right? The unfortunate thing is that people are savvy, all right? People are not stupid. So if I look and see that my labor income is going to be taxed at a higher rate,
switch over.
Exactly. If I have the capability, I want to see how I can actually bring most of that income into a non-taxable band or a lower taxable band.
And all within permissible virtues of the law.
The system is designed that way.
Right? Yeah.
I mean, a very good example, I think, is Warren Buffett in the United States.
Yeah.
Yep. He has famously said that his effective tax rate is lower than his secretary's.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Because he gets everything from capital gains to investment returns.
Yeah.
And that allows him to be taxed at a lower rate. Okay. So, the high net wealth individuals, the richer people, the richer bands, they have the access to information, they have access to avenues to invest. This could be anything from shares in companies, IPOs, art, wine, whiskey. Yeah? All these things have been booming over the years. And in many countries, even in Malaysia, it is those gains from that will not be taxable. Property. If you look at individuals buying property in Malaysia, after 6 years, you pay no capital gains tax on it.
Yeah? Yeah.
So if I'm a wealthy individual, I know developers,
I'm
able to buy, hold on for 6 years and sell.
And they can stomach that kind of investment timeline, there's no problem.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So it has been designed for that. Should there be a shift towards looking at taxing capital more? I believe so, right?
What would be the ideas that you can think of right now? Just
I think the government's move to look at taxing capital gains on the sale of shares in unlisted companies is a positive move, right? Malaysia is not the first mover in this. We are probably one of the laggards.
Yeah, okay? But when it was announced in February, there was no clear timeline, date, details, etc.
Yes.
To date.
To date.
Another one is wealth tax. Again, it was mentioned early in February.
Yeah.
Nothing of color has been introduced yet.
Let me come back to wealth tax. Okay, I'll come to wealth tax. Okay, but looking at capital gains itself, I believe the government has basically, the budget was retabled in February. Okay, so we've got about less than 10 months since then. Okay, so I believe they've been looking at it, working on it. They have been getting feedback, and I believe they've been drafting the legislation. So with the idea of introducing it in 2024, as they announced in the last budget, they want to introduce it in 2024. I think they are being cautious about it, and they want to make sure they get it right, because if they do get it wrong, it would have impact on investment. Right? So I don't think they want to get it wrong. Now, there are schools of thought in Malaysia which are arguing that a capital gains tax will impact inbound investment, it will discourage entrepreneurship, etc. I disagree with that. Yep. If you look at it globally, most countries have a capital gains tax. We always turn around and we say Singapore doesn't have one, right? As my argument is that Singapore and Malaysia are apples and oranges. We have different requirements, we have different needs. We have to look at it from a Malaysian perspective. And I believe this is an important first step. Now, as to whether they will expand the capital gains tax to other areas, let's say an example I used earlier, art. Yeah? So if someone buys and sells art and they make a gain on it, or let's say property after 6 years, that is a possibility. I will not be surprised if it happens in the future, but I do not believe the government is going to rush into that. I believe these are going to be baby steps in order to allow the general taxpayer to be able to accept it in the longer term.
Let's talk about wealth tax and luxury tax. First of all, for the benefit of everyone, is it the same, one and the same, wealth tax and luxury tax?
No, they're two different taxes, okay? Maybe I quickly touch on luxury tax, okay? So luxury tax, when they proposed it, it is looking at luxury high-end items. This could be your Birkin handbags. This could be your...
Louis Vuitton.
Yeah. It could also be things like yachts, cars, private planes. Okay. Right?
So it's an acquisition of high... ticket items.
Yes. Okay.
And then get taxed upon that.
So an extra tax is going to be put on the acquisition cost.
On top of whatever the progressive tax or whatever.
Exactly.
Sales tax or whatever.
Yes. So what we don't know yet is that what is the definition of luxury? Okay. So if let's say Birkin and Louis Vuitton are luxury handbags, what about, I don't know, Charles and Keith? Will they be deemed to be a luxury item as well? Yeah. So that definition is not out yet.
Okay.
And if you put in there. The other thing to remember is that Malaysia, we are highly dependent on external factors, including tourism. Yeah? Tourism is a major contributor to our economy. Yeah? We've got hotels, shopping malls, etc., and all that. We try to attract as much tourists as possible, which is a good thing for the country. Yeah? Now, tourists also come to do shopping. Yeah? So the question has been asked is that, will luxury tax have an impact on that? Potentially, yes. Tourists are savvy like anybody else. If my Louis Vuitton bag is going to cost me 10% more here than in Singapore, I'm going to go to Singapore and buy it.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. So maybe if a luxury tax is introduced, possibility is that a kind of a refund system for tourists so that they are not impacted by it and we don't drive them away to any other country to go do their shopping there.
Yeah.
The other, of course, is that the point of sale. Huh? So who is going to collect the tax? Is it the retailer when you're selling the tax and impose the tax there? Or can we embed it into the system, for example, into the sales tax system? Yeah? So that, for example, cars, luxury cars and all that, we already have a sales tax on cars. So when I go to buy a car, that sales tax component is already in there. Can luxury tax also be, inserted into the sales tax system? So you increase the sales tax for certain categories of items that you deem to be luxury and collect it that way. That may be more efficient.
So that's the mechanism and the definition of luxury tax. Wealth tax?
Okay. Wealth tax is a tax on the wealth of an individual.
And this is different from inheritance tax?
Yes, absolutely different. Right? So there are two different taxes. Now, most countries no longer have wealth tax. They have moved away from wealth tax. I think among the OECD member countries, and I think in the 1990s, there were about 12 of them which had wealth tax, and today it's come down to 4. I believe
it's basically non-existent then.
Yeah, I believe it is Belgium, Norway, France, and Spain in the European Union which have it. A number of South American countries have recently introduced a kind of a wealth tax, and this is post-COVID. Post-COVID. And I think India has actually abolished wealth tax in 2016. They had a pretty extensive wealth tax system. Right? Now, wealth tax and to an extent inheritance tax, okay, they are generally taxes which are looked at as a tool for wealth redistribution, income equalization. Right? So it is not a big revenue generator, if you look at the numbers. So it is not as though a country has wealth tax and suddenly it sees a huge spike in this tax revenue collection.
That it doesn't.
It is a good, I would say, showpiece tax, if you want to turn around and say that, oh, we are trying to bring wealth inequality down. Right?
Yeah.
Okay? So an example, I think, for wealth tax, okay, the collection amounts were very low. So Malaysia, okay, has never had a wealth tax. The problem with the wealth tax is, in most countries which have it now, if you have a wealth tax, you are imposing on the net assets of the individual.
Okay.
So let's say we make a simple example. I'm an individual with a $5 million house.
Okay.
Presuming that's my only asset.
Okay.
I'm living in that house.
Okay.
So they will take the $5 million. There's no mortgage, etc., and all that.
Okay.
The wealth tax is imposed on the value of the house.
Okay.
Right. Now, the following year, the same thing happens. The house has not generated any revenue for me.
Oh. Right? Oh. So it's truly capital, nothing to do with income
exactly.
or whatever.
Yeah, right. And what happens now? Let's say, for example, we expand that for a little, and let's say I have shares in a company. The shares are today worth $100 million.
Yeah.
Right? So they calculated the imposed wealth tax on that $100
million. Yeah.
Right? Now, if next year the share market is bad and those shares drop to 300 million,
yeah.
I'm not getting a refund.
No.
I'm still going to be taxed on 300 million.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm. And what about inheritance tax then?
Inheritance tax, most Malaysians don't know we actually had an inheritance
that's
tax.
That's right,
before.
That's yes. right. I know because I went to school, I studied accounting, I know.
Yeah.
But that was the only reason I knew about it, you know?
It was called an estate duty. It's abolished
That's
in 1991.
Right. Yeah.
I'll tell you, when I first took up tax, it was way after 91, right? And I saw estate duty. I actually thought it was a tax on estates, rubber estates, etc.
That
was my first impression. Right? Yeah. But an estate duty we had, I think it applied to basically inheritances, right? Mm. When someone died, their estate was taxed, okay? Mm. And it was an estate above 2 million ringgit.
At that point in time, yeah.
At that point in time. Yeah. And it was taxed at a progressive rate was 0, 5, and 15, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, yep, yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, those were the rates. Mm. But it was abolished. Right? Many countries do have inheritance tax, unlike wealth tax. Okay, I think in Japan, the top rate of wealth tax is 55%.
That's right.
Yep. So many countries do have wealth tax. The countries which do not have, inheritance tax, apologies.
Yeah.
The countries which do not have inheritance tax tend to be more tax haven type countries. Your Bermudas, your Barbados, etc.
So are we a tax haven?
Yeah. So, well, yeah, we did have it kind of thing and all that. Yeah, but inheritance tax has been making a comeback, all right? It is not as widespread as capital gains tax, okay?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you ask me in terms of how widespread things are, wealth tax is probably the least, inheritance tax, and then capital gains tax. Yeah? Capital gains tax, almost everywhere, almost every country has it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in terms of inheritance tax itself, okay,
mm-hmm.
there can be problems with it as well, mm-hmm. okay, because administration. Okay? Mm-hmm. You need to administer the tax, mm-hmm. right? And the tax take is quite low. I think the OECD average for inheritance tax is only 0.53%
mm-hmm.
of tax to GDP collection.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm.
I think Japan, as I mentioned, 55%, is only 1.53% of their revenue collection.
Mm-hmm.
So you see that it's not a revenue generator per se.
Mm-hmm.
Right? For a country like Malaysia, okay, we've had an estate duty before. I think we should be able to reintroduce it. All right? Is it going to be a game changer in terms of bridging our budget deficit? I don't believe so. If you ask me in terms of wealth taxes, inheritance taxes, etc., I believe we should actually look at the capital items, revenue items, all right, which form part of this wealth of an individual or form part of an inheritance, etc., and see how we can tax it from the very beginning itself.
Mm.
As we talked about capital gains tax, yeah, asset values. Right? Mm. We've talked about dividends in Malaysia are exempt.
Mm. Mm.
It's very easy for a wealthy person to have the company pay him a dividend mm. rather than a salary.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. Simply because dividends are not taxable.
In fact, that's how they do it now. I know a lot of my friends.
Exactly, yeah. So, I mean, if it's legal, why not? Yeah.
It is legal, yeah. And that's why not? Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
You're not laughing at my face, you're drawing a salary. You know, it's like a punishment, you know, to accept a salary.
Yeah. But again, we have to be careful about wealth taxes, inheritance tax, etc., right? So As I mentioned earlier, wealth taxes, there are four countries in Europe which have it, including Norway. Norway is one of those Nordic countries where they have high tax rates, and they also, I think previously I've discussed, they give back a lot to society from education, etc., and all that. Right? There was a French finance minister from the 1600s, okay, Jean-Baptiste Colbert. I think he had this quote where he said that the art of taxation is plucking the goose, plucking the most amount of feathers from the goose with the least amount of hissing. And Norway last year, they increased the wealth tax rate, right? And they increased it, I think, by 0.1%. So from 1%, it went to 1.1% or 1.2%, somewhere around there, right? But surprisingly, I think that was the tipping point.
The straw that broke the camel's back, isn't
it? Yes, absolutely. Because a number of ultra-high net individuals from Norway have been moving their tax residency. They've been moving to Italy, to Switzerland, etc., and all that, because as far as they're concerned, it was becoming too much. And what has happened now is that the tax take in Norway from wealth taxes has actually dropped.
Of course.
Because this individual has moved out, they no longer can collect it from there, it has dropped. So it has been a bit of a shock to the Norwegian system.
Also a good lesson for the rest of us.
Exactly. So if you're going to introduce a new tax or reintroduce an old tax, I think it's important to do the study to make sure that you do not overtax or overburden or drive away taxpayers.
Very quickly, I remember the last time you spoke, you were talking about Malaysia tax to GDP ratio at a very low rate at 11%. This is lower than the Asia Pacific rate at about 19.5-19.6%. OECD ranges about 34, maybe 33%. Are we going to resolve that tax to GDP ratio percentage and at least bring it closer towards the Asia PAC averages?
Okay. So I think the last time I spoke to you, I was using the 2020 numbers because they don't use, I would say, immediate past year numbers.
Okay.
So the OECD has come out using the 21 numbers now. There's been a slight uptick in our tax to GDP. I think it's 11.8% now from previously 11.4%. The Asia-Pacific average remains at about 19.8% and OECD average about 33%. Right? I think in Asia-Pac, Singapore, Philippines, Vietnam, Thailand are all ahead of us. Right? Indonesia is slightly behind us. Now, if we manage to bring our tax to GDP ratio up to the Asia-Pacific average of 19.8%, back of an envelope calculation, that should see an additional revenue of about 120 billion ringgit.
Oh, wow.
So right now we collect about close to 160 billion ringgit. So that 8% will be about 120 billion ringgit.
Okay? On top of that?
On top of that.
So 200 plus billion.
Yes. So if we manage to move our tax to GDP ratio from 11.8% to 19.8%.
Is it achievable?
I do not believe. I don't believe it's achievable the next few years. It's a tall order. Ideally, I would like us to see our tax to GDP ratio moving up to about 15%.
And how much is that in quantum base?
I think at 15%, it should be about 80 billion extra. Again, it's a back of an envelope calculation, right? Don't hold me to it.
That kind of makes sense because our subsidies are already 80 billion. If we rationalize our subsidies, that kind of savings can be attained.
True. Now, in terms of how do we achieve it, I go back to e-invoicing. I believe it's a big first step. I believe it's extremely important. There are many leakages in terms of our black economy. I think we discussed this previously. I won't repeat myself on
it.
So I think, because of the underground economy, we do not have the information. We need to flush that out and bring them into a formal economy. We need that information. We need that data. E-invoicing would be good. GST, when it's introduced, would also be a game changer in the sense it brings all of them out and we are able to know exactly what they are spending on, what they are earning, and be able to tax them accordingly. Yeah. Now, we talk about our B40, our M40, our T20. I don't necessarily agree with the T20 definition, right? Okay, but we talk about moving our B40 up, our M40 up.
Mobility.
Exactly. I support that wholeheartedly, right? I support that wholeheartedly. I believe that a robust tax system where we actually increase our tax collection and the funds are well spent, especially in sectors like education, health, this will allow people to move up that income ladder, it will allow that mobility. Education is extremely important. If we have a world-class education system funded with taxpayer dollars properly, you think about it. I mean, it could be in a generation or two, we could see our populace being able to earn the amount of income to actually have a pretty decent livable life, a living wage.
Yeah. Final question, wish list for budget 2024. As a personal Rakyat Malaysia kind of wish list, what would you be? Don't put your PwC hat on. This is your Rakyat Malaysia hat on.
Rakyat Malaysia, no taxes for me.
No taxes.
Well, ideally, okay, I want to see this country prosper. I want to see this country advance. We need to right the keel of this ship. Over the years, I believe that our budget deficit has grown. We need to narrow that budget deficit. We need to improve our tax collection. Our tax base is too narrow. We need, as much as we hate it, we do need some new taxes. Capital gains is a good first step. GST, I believe it will be introduced in the future. I think that's also a good step, which needs to think. Now, my wish list is actually not in terms of how many new taxes you introduce and what you collect, etc. What I actually want is that how do you spend the collection? I believe that we need some kind of a social security net. We do have a limited social security net, maybe and kind of an old age pension for those who qualify. I'm not talking about old age pension for someone like me or you, etc. and all that. I believe we will be well taken care of in our retirement. But there are lots of Malaysians, irrespective of race or religion, who live on the margins of poverty. I believe there should be a system in order for them to be looked after. It has to be funded by taxpayer dollars. As an individual, I'm willing to pay more taxes if I know the money is being put to good use. I would like to see the government work on that, and I hope that this budget is probably a good first start, and the government, the next 3 to 4 years, actually starts implementing many of these measures.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much for this kind of conversation, which is going to be happening a lot more on Astro Awani. So do stay tuned with us. For now, that was our conversation with Auru Bindo Poniah, the director at PwC Tax Services. You can also check out our previous episodes where Bindo was talking at length about Malaysia tax to GDP ratio conversation. That was a very interesting one. That was like last year, I think.
I believe it was last year.
Yeah. So do check those kind of conversations out. For now, my name is Ibrahim Sani. Catch you in the next one.